to disarm troublemakers' damaging ionic charge and keep them from getting ignited when they're still out in the wild yonder of your body. Your body is not only filled with electricity, it is electricity. It's why when someone has a heart attack, emergency responders use electricity to try to waken the heart. It's also why we need this chemical compound from the liver to float around the body and do its job of coating toxins, suffocating them, shorting out their charges, and keeping these troublemakers dormant, so that the body's electricity won't ignite them. It's an extraordinary job that a liver can do, and do well if it's healthy. Since medical research and science haven't scratched the surface of all the liver does, though, we don't know much about it, so we can't be the cheerleaders the liver needs. If your liver is struggling, it will only be able to release small amounts of this undiscovered disarming chemical compound, which means toxins can escape its reach and slowly wreak havoc. Troublemaker storage. If your liver is too run down or overloaded to neutralize and repackage a certain toxin in a safe manner, or to produce its disarming chemical compound and release it into the bloodstream, then the liver will stow away toxins that enter it in order to protect you. There are two types of storage facilities in the liver. The first type is what we looked at in the previous two chapters: pockets of glucose, glycogen, vitamins, minerals and other nutrients, as well as other phytochemicals and helpful hormones, in porous, sponge-like areas along the outside of the liver, easily accessed through the pores themselves and not just sent out through main avenues like the central veins. Then there are the storage pockets for harmful materials. Because this is the secondary method for dealing with toxins, the liver's first line of defense is to get those toxins out of your body. These aren't storage bins set aside ahead of time for this purpose. They're more like heaps at a trash dump that arise out of necessity. Scrap metal goes in one heap, rotted wood in another, old tires in another, dishwashers and washing machines in another, while hazardous waste like old batteries, refrigerators and microwave ovens get grouped in a contained area. The liver drives toxins deeper and deeper into itself depending on how damaging they have the potential to be. It's closest to the center of the liver, where it likes to push materials that include petroleum products, dioxins, DDT and other pesticides, aspartame, MSG, viruses and viral waste matter, conventional cleaners, certain pharmaceuticals such as opioids, and toxic heavy metals. This is all in the name of protecting you. With the most destructive substances as deep as they can be, you're able to go about your life for as long as possible. Why hoard harmful materials in its deep, inner core when they can eventually cause liver sickness there? Because the liver has a responsibility to make sure that those poisons aren't free-floating and able to head to the brain and heart, where they could do extensive damage and shorten your lifespan. The liver takes the hit instead, patiently waiting hour by hour, day by day, year by year, for its chance to cleanse or detox the items in the way it needs to. More in Part 4, Liver Salvation. The liver is not just one static mass. It ebbs and flows and practically shapeshifts, which it owes to certain undiscovered cells that I call perime cells, for those times when the liver's storage bins get too full. These perime cells are produced and released by liver lobules. While research and science have correctly documented lobules as six-sided, they're not aware of these perime cells, nor the fact that perime cells cluster in groups of sixes and nines. For example, a larger group of 33 perime cells would be considered a six. to form tissue that can adhere and release as needed, block certain areas, pad other areas, and be disassembled and reconstructed to allow for storage bin expansion in the liver. By shape-shifting like this, Parenchyma cells help prevent the release of toxins that would be harmful to the liver and other organs into the bloodstream. Free-floating Parenchyma cells, part of the liver family's cell structure, can't live outside the liver, and medical research and science aren't aware of them because researchers can't live inside a liver for a day to witness what's really happening. A cadaver's liver won't exhibit all that a living liver has to show, and any living liver, such as one being prepared for transplant, must be treated with the utmost care, not poked, prodded, and damaged. And so the liver remains in large part a mystery to medical communities. Medicine is still far from understanding all of its inner workings. Taking on the world's mistakes. These two levels of protection, disarmament and detainment, don't always last forever. When a woman is on average age 38 and a man is on average age 48, these abilities often start to wane and symptoms such as hot flashes and weight gain start to crop up. Symptoms that often get mistaken for menopause or aging. This is not because the liver naturally loses power midway through a person's life. It's because of all we're up against in the way of pathogens, pollutants, poisons, and diet that overburden the liver over time if they aren't cleansed, so that at a certain point, the liver sends out default warning signs in the way of symptoms. It says, "I've taken care of you for decades. I can't keep going at this rate." Unfortunately, since it started, coinciding with the hormone replacement movement of the 1950s and 60s, this cry has been misinterpreted. When the liver cried out for help during this first wave of women experiencing liver trouble, the liver got slapped in the face by gender-driven opportunists in the medical arena. More on why these symptoms started to arise at that time in history in medical medium. The liver still gets misunderstood. This punishment the liver has faced is something like your daughter trying out for swim team as a way to ease the emotional challenges of adjusting to a new school and not making the cut because she wouldn't buy the expensive swimsuit that the coach, unbeknownst to you, was obligated to sell at quota due to an athletic department contract. Your daughter's real needs in this scenario, like your livers, go ignored. At this point in human history, because of the toxins we inherit at conception and in utero, we don't come into the world with livers working at 100%. So we start out at a disadvantage, and then there's everything we're exposed to after we're born. You can be mindful of your health, watch what you eat, exercise, keep your immune system strong and follow your doctor's orders with prescriptions, and if you don't tap into the basics of liver rescue that we'll look at in part 4, it's common to have a liver working only at 60% of its intended protective capacity by the time you've reached age 40. Even normal antibiotic use as a child can be enough to result in a weakened liver by a person's late 20s if steps aren't taken to detox and restore the liver in the interim. Back from the brink. There's so much that we deal with in this world. Viruses, bacteria, mold, pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, engine oil, gasoline, exhaust fumes, plastics, synthetically scented products, toxic heavy metals, radiation, hidden ingredients, high-fat meals, high-stress jobs, and more. It's a constant onslaught, and our livers do everything they can to defend us from the world's mistakes for as long as they can. The liver is the most grounded organ in the body, That's why it's able to withstand so much for so many years, pushed to the degree that it is without support, silently, gracefully, like an undercover spy. The liver detects threats and neutralizes or detains them, that is, until it becomes overpowered and cries out for your help. When it can no longer keep up with the processing of fat, with the glucose, glycogen, vitamin and mineral storage, with the toxin defense, and with the screening and filtering of blood that we'll look at in the next chapter, then it starts to take on fat, becoming a fatty liver. Or it begins to grow a cyst, hemangioma, or tumor inside. Or scar tissue begins to develop rapidly, sending you into cirrhosis. Or gout, diabetes, eczema, psoriasis, or other symptoms and conditions you weren't aware were liver-related begin to cause problems. Or undetected viruses proliferate, leading to viral issues in the body, labeled as autoimmune, with pathogens eating up tissue and breaking down cells, causing pain and chronic mystery illness. When we support the liver, though, when we bring it back from the brink, or when we're proactive about protecting it before it needs to send those emergency signals, then a world of possibility opens up to us. We get to make the calls, and in doing so, we change our destiny. Chapter 6. Your Purifying Liver. Screening and Filtering Blood. Your liver is one of your busiest organs, with a highway of blood running through it. As you've heard in the previous chapters, this blood is rich with nutrients from the food you eat, and also filled with medicines you take, the occasional alcohol you may drink, toxic heavy metals and chemicals you come in contact with, excess adrenaline that you may constantly be up against, as well as various hormones, some of which come from toxic, detrimental sources, and some that are essential for the liver to be able to mass-produce cells so it can mend and heal any of its burned-out tissue. As your body's central processing center, your liver must be masterful at separating the bad from the good. The poisons, pathogens and excess fat from the nutrients, essential hormones and other beneficial elements that can help you thrive, all while trying to maintain the proper oxygen balance with so many different materials in the blood. Monitoring the blood begins with the liver's immune system. White blood cells that are very wise and quick to react at any given moment, standing guard at the hepatic portal vein, the main entrance to the liver, on the lookout for viruses and bacteria. More on that in the next chapter. Then the blood branches out into smaller vessels and enters the liver itself, where it's the task of the liver lobules and Kupffer cells to sort and distribute the helpful elements while screening for toxins or pathogens that slip by the guards. Gospel of Purification. It's helpful to think of these lobules once again as elves in a toy factory, stationed in front of a conveyor belt of raw materials coming in from the outside. Is that a piece of hearty pine that will make a sturdy rocking horse, or some lightweight balsa that will be perfect for a toy plane? Does that log have an infestation of bugs that will wreak havoc if they get loose in the workshop? Is that plank contaminated by pesticides? It's all for the elves to decide and to sort and distribute accordingly. Kupffer cells, configured like sweeping apparatuses, are the brooms the elves use to clean up their workshop. As elves, lobules, get hungry and find food, glucose, life enters the brooms, Kupffer cells, so they can perform their job. You and I know that these elves and brooms aren't really magic. Funny thing is, they may as well be for all that medical research and science have discovered in the way of how liver lobules and Kupffer cells truly interact and the roles they play in deciding what to do with all of the different materials coming through your bloodstream.
While science is aware of certain cells being part of a cleansing process, such as discarding old red blood cells, how the liver's cells communicate and how the liver performs for its own needs while simultaneously keeping the rest of you in mind are a whole other story.
Medical research and science haven't gotten to the point of decoding the complex, precise chemical functions that allow for intercommunication of liver cells, or how lobules decipher what's good and bad. As far as the medical establishment is concerned, it may really be magical creatures deciding which unhelpful materials get disarmed, thrown out or stored where they can't cause harm, which helpful materials get organized and put away by category, and which go straight to the elves who build toys, pack them up, and send them out. It's especially important that your liver do a good job of separating the beneficial from the toxic, because after it leaves the liver, blood moves to the heart. The blood that reaches the heart is meant to be clean, and it is if your liver is in good condition. Your liver uses all of its reserves and power to fend off and dispose of toxic threats, knowing that if they escape the liver, they'll do you harm. As you've already heard, it buries the most toxic threats, such as solvents and pesticides, in its core, and has a particular awareness that viruses must be harnessed deep inside, because that's safer than viruses making a run for the brain or heart. Before it ever gets to that point of stowing away troublemakers, though, the liver will try to dispose of them as part of its screening and filtering process. If it can get troublemakers out of your body safely, it will. For the most part, that means allowing for less toxic debris to leave in a taking out the trash process, so it has more strength to contain the more dangerous toxins. When the liver lets go, toxins get released to three possible places. The colon, sometimes via the bile and gallbladder, where they're eliminated through the feces, the kidneys, where they're eliminated through urine, and, as a last resort, loose in the bloodstream, where they become free radicals. A truly healthy liver, one that's clean and isn't struggling, will only send troublemakers to the colon and urine for elimination. Even a liver that's in poor condition will do everything it can to prevent serious threats from going free in the bloodstream. As for those troublemakers that the liver has deemed safe to send out, the liver lobule elves package them with chemical compounds that identify the neutralized troublemakers' destinations, like tracking information on a parcel, and carry them toward either the colon or the kidneys. The sponge-like nature of the liver plays a role in how it releases debris, as it excretes most of these toxins through the pores in its underside when the liver is in trouble. Highly toxic, sluggish and stagnant, and unable to release the toxins through the bile duct. It becomes an emergency excretion tactic that doesn't always go perfectly. Once squeezed out the bottom of the liver, you can picture the bottom of the liver sort of like the underside of a mushroom cap. Many of these poisons that have been screened, filtered, neutralized, and packaged with an identifying chemical compound can absorb into tiny micro blood vessels on the outside of the colon wall that catch debris and guide them to larger veins so they can enter into the colon for elimination. When the liver is sluggish, weak and struggling, the elves get tired and overworked and don't always wrap the troublemaker, presents, too well on their way out. Without the chemical compound packaged properly with it, a toxin released from the liver becomes a free radical package with no stamp, tracking number, or address saying where it's supposed to go. It heads out a hepatic vein and up to the heart in this unidentified, untethered form, cycles through the rest of the circulatory system, and in many cases gets returned to sender, coming back to the liver when the bloodstream's path brings it there. The liver has a second way of sending troublemakers to the colon for elimination, and that's through the bile. This is its preferred process for disposing of more heavy-duty debris. While still microscopic, and even beyond microscopic, a microscope could only find half of these troublemaker particles. These are the poisons your body most wants to shield you from as it delivers them out of your body. It's another reason why dysfunctional livers with diminishing bile are such a big problem. Because bile is a big part of our detox process. In good condition with plenty of bile, the liver can send toxins out through the bile duct directly to the intestinal tract or through the hepatic duct to the gallbladder to be released next time it's called for to aid with digestion. On the other hand, if the liver is stagnant, burdened, clogged, and beaten down, not only does it lose the elves' packaging help and the volume of bile to flush out plenty of toxins, it also has less oxygen to aid with the delivery process. It must hold on to these serious troublemakers instead. When your liver gets to this point of being unable to process all of the unproductive materials running through it, more free radical debris and toxic matter, the less toxic matter that the liver didn't bury in its core, will be in the bloodstream, forcing the heart to pump harder, to pull that blood up from the liver, like sucking pudding through a straw, resulting in high blood pressure. If your liver is clogged to the point that clumps of biofilm start to break off into the blood, then you're likely to develop heart flutters, as this jelly-like substance gums up heart valves, preventing smooth flow of blood. More in Chapter 18, Mystery Heart Palpitations. Those are just two of the side effects of a clogged liver. You'll hear about others, such as weight gain, in Part 2, The Unseen Storm, and Part 3, The Call to Battle. If we knew about all of this from birth, we would grow up with reverence for our liver's filtration abilities, and we'd honour them accordingly. Instead, we hear more about the liver's role in detoxification, the breaking down of harmful chemicals and agents, including drugs and alcohol, so the body can process them out. We hear that over time, processing of these types of substances can cause scarring and hardening of the liver tissue. This is about as far as medical communities' understanding of detox goes. In reality, it's just a fraction of one of the most powerful functions your liver performs, protecting you from dangerous substances. What's off the radar of medical research and science is the full extent of the liver's miraculous ability to screen and filter even when your liver is sluggish, stagnant, overburdened, or sick. When researchers truly discover what your liver is doing here and report it in the medical journals, doctors and medical universities will herald it as gospel. One precious liver. Another way you can think of this screening and filtering process is as a vetting and inspection process for poisons and toxins in your blood. As you've seen, the liver's filtration system catches as many of these toxins as it can so they can't make mischief in your body. As part of its storage system, the liver throws the specific troublemakers that are too dangerous to release in the moment into liver cells, such as hepatocytes, waiting for the day when that person's lifestyle changes so they can be cleansed safely. Over time, these cells stretch to make room if they get crowded, then eventually harden to prevent the cell walls from bursting and letting loose the poisons.
For the less aggressive toxins, the liver uses those shape-shifting parenchyma cells to trap them temporarily until it can neutralize and then excrete them, allowing the parenchyma cells to then move along, regather, and regroup according to what they're needed for next.
It's a chemical function that creates hepatocyte hardening for the more dangerous troublemakers, a chemical substance naturally created by the liver that saturates a cell and cell membrane, entering into the cell prison and gluing the poisons and toxins together, creating microadhesions that become scar tissue over time. This is where a doctor may point out scar tissue in your liver, citing it as a bad thing. In fact, that scar tissue, while not ideal for liver function, is better than the alternative of troublemakers flowing freely, plaguing whatever they like, beginning with the heart, for example, by causing plaque to gather there or creating a viral infection inside your heart. The scar tissue is a sign that your body is trying to protect you. This cell hardening process is for the more dangerous troublemakers that the liver can't afford to let loose in your body. Scar tissue is a sacrifice it's willing to make to protect you from the worst outcome, which would be those troublemakers heading to your brain or heart. Another chemical function that the liver performs is to produce a chemical compound that gathers up the white blood cell guards to act together as a softening agent on hardened hepatocyte prison cell walls. The white blood cells can then enter the hepatocytes and destroy any viruses hiding within their scar tissue. It's also a technique that the liver employs when we give it a chance to detox. The softening agent can free poisons from hardened cells deep within the liver. Next, the liver lobule Ls will repackage and prepare the troublemakers for excretion through bile, absorption into the colon, or elimination through the kidneys. Alternatively, you can think of your liver as a filter on a cigarette, catching some of the tar, chemicals, and nicotine from cigarette smoke before it enters your lungs. As we know well by now, that cigarette filter isn't enough to stop all of the smoke's harm. Toxins still get through to the lungs. Similarly, the liver can't stop every harmful element from getting past it when there's a stream of them, which is why the deactivation and detainment process you heard about in the previous chapter is so important. What the liver does do to screen and filter is miraculous. It stands between us and tremendous suffering from the world's pollution, pathogenic activity, and poisons that we don't even realize we're exposed to in everyday life. It keeps us alive. Without it, we'd all have toxic blood. And yet, the liver doesn't hold a place of honour in our lives. Instead, our standard reference point for filters is that they're replaceable, disposable even. Vacuum cleaner bags, water filters, air conditioner filters, aquarium filters, oil filters, pool filters, When we see that they get full or worn through or black with waste and build-up, we can take them out and empty them or throw them away. What if you had to keep using the same coffee filter over and over for 5 years? What if you took your car to the auto shop for a tune-up and the mechanic said, "No can do. We can't replace that transmission filter." You'd want to learn everything you could about how to preserve, maintain and clean out the filters you use every day. In the end, the liver is no cigarette filter, good for one use that we'll soon toss on the ground and step on, knowing there's a new filter attached to the next smoke. We only get this one liver, this one precious filter. It is an organ in your body, and you can't replace it, except in the extreme scenario of a transplant. The liver you're born with is the one you're granted for life. It's one of your most intelligent organs, with many intricate and complex responsibilities and techniques, and it can only do its best work when it isn't constantly thwarted. Trouble ahead. The last thing your liver wants is to release a reckless group of venomous snakes into the wild of your bloodstream and body. When toxins slip by the liver's primary filtration and neutralization processes, the Parenchyma cells you heard about in the previous chapter, which look very much like normal hepatocytes, provide secondary backup neutralization by releasing a disarming chemical compound that shocks rogue poisons, stopping them in their tracks and preparing them to be filtered out through the efforts of the lobules and Kupffer cells. Sometimes, if the liver becomes too compromised, it's down to its last line of defense. When the liver senses that its normal screening, filtering, disarming, detaining, or disposal processes won't be enough to address a crowd of troublemakers, and that as a result those troublemakers are on the verge of escaping unchecked, the liver sounds an alarm bell. An undiscovered chemical process that I call hepatracking. Essentially, the liver takes adrenaline that it has absorbed from daily stressors, recycles it, and adds it to a chemical compound tonic for the liver cells and lobule elves to consume for supernatural ability and strength in order to prevent the troublemakers from escaping. The tonic also helps direct all other cells within the liver to waste management of these troublemakers that haven't been processed, packaged, or disarmed properly. Because poisons start to escape only when the liver is already toxic and overloaded with troublemakers. When this alarm bell rings, it tends to ring a lot. Pandemonium can set in, like a fire alarm going off in the toy factory 3 times a day, halting the production line and keeping the elves from doing their normal jobs over and over and over again. Healing activation. If you're taking care of your health, choosing natural products as often as possible instead of products like plug-in air fresheners and conventional household cleaners that expose you to harmful chemicals, steering clear of the fad diets that overload the liver with fat and clog up its filtration abilities, and employing safe liver cleanse techniques like those we'll look at in Part 4, liver salvation. This will reflect itself in your liver. You'll make your liver's quality control manageable. Instead of bursting at the seams with toxins, liver cells will have the resources to screen, disarm, and neutralize troublemakers so they can release and dispose of toxins without causing harm. Before cells become overcrowded and scarring occurs. And if scarring is already underway, you can harness the power of diet to activate a healing function of the liver that's undiscovered by medical research and science. When you consume antioxidants, those found in wild blueberries, red pitaya, dragon fruit, and red apple skins especially, as well as in other fruits, vegetables, herbs, and spices, the liver releases a chemical compound that adheres to the antioxidants. Together, the liver's chemical formulation and the healing food's antioxidants form a hybrid biochemical compound that acts as a softener, similar to the one that white blood cells create when needed. The difference is that the white blood cell compound is formulated to enter prison cells and destroy viruses. This antioxidant-based softener performs a rescue operation for hardened, burdened, scar tissue and other damaged tissue, membranes and lobules. In particular, this softener brings life back to scarred, damaged lobule elves. Softening hardened adhesions and scar tissue allows new cells to grow, making liver restoration and resurrection possible. This translates to you getting better. As you can see by now, the liver is one of the smartest, most underestimated organs we possess. With brilliant techniques to draw upon, it has your back like nothing and no one else can. That's never truer than when it's enlisting its dedicated team of defenders, its own personal immune system, to protect you from invaders. Chapter 7. Your Heroic Liver. The Liver's Immune System. When we hear the term immune system, we tend to think of our body's defense against sniffles, runny noses, fevers, sore throats, and coughs, and rightfully so. Protection against colds and flus is a critical function of the immune system. That's why we learn as kids to help out the process with plenty of fluids, rest, and vitamin C. Evidence of invaders isn't always so obvious as these symptoms, though. Viruses and bacteria sometimes wage attacks far beneath the surface on our organs and glands. In truth, conditions such as fibromyalgia, multiple sclerosis, MS, rheumatoid arthritis, RA, myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome, MECFS, lupus, shingles, Lyme disease, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, hypothyroidism, and dozens more all get their start from viruses taking up residence in the liver. More than we know, we rely on immune defenses that happen deep beneath the surface to protect us from illnesses that have a much more lasting impact than the common cold. The liver doesn't like viruses and bacteria residing inside of it, so when it can't stop them from entering, it does everything it can to keep them contained as deep within itself as possible. Then it will send killer cells after the viruses to try to keep them at bay and guard the deep, internal fabric of the liver. When a virus starts to get out of control or tries to leave the depths of the liver, special white blood cells are there to destroy it. The liver also brings in white blood cells randomly and periodically to control any viruses living deep within it. Why doesn't the liver send its white count to out and out destroy all viruses and other pathogens in the liver? Because the liver is already putting a tremendous number of resources into trying to fight off new pathogens entering in through the hepatic portal vein and hepatic artery, trying to kill them off before entry so they don't need to be buried in the first place. These are the immune defences of the liver. The liver's personalised immune system, a network of white blood cells that protect you from pathogens that threaten to harm the organ and take a toll on your health. Much of the sophistication of the liver's immune system is still unknown to medical communities, which is why we don't hear about it in our everyday world. It's like a secret recipe we all enjoy without realizing it. We eat the cake, it makes our lives better. Still, we don't know all the ingredients yet, or just how special those ingredients are. Blood cells at work for you. It's unknown to medical science and research that your liver's immune system is made up of six main units. Hepatic vessel white blood cells, hepatic portal vein white blood cells, and hepatic artery white blood cells are three of those units, and they're soldiers that stand watch over all blood that enters the liver. While produced by the liver, hepatic vessel white blood cells don't actually live there. They're sent on a long journey down the hepatic portal vein against the current and then spend their lives away from home, guarding the blood vessels that lead to the portal vein. Hepatic portal vein white blood cells monitor the portal vein itself. This is the main highway into the liver, past the point of any more on-ramps. Exits from here on out will all be within the liver. Mainly these white blood cells stay at the vein's entryways, like security guards or the TSA. Blood coming through the hepatic portal vein is filled with both nutrients and poisons. This is the hotspot for any kind of troublemaker trying to make its way to the liver, since it's the path for the majority of the blood to the liver and it comes unfiltered from the digestive tract. Viruses, bacteria, pesticides from the foods you eat, everything else unproductive that goes into your stomach and, in turn, your intestinal tract, can flow through this vein. Their specialized white blood cells stand watch over all of it. Hepatic artery white blood cells are stationed at the other circulatory entrance to the liver, the hepatic artery. Because this blood is coming from the heart, it has higher levels of oxygen than the blood that enters from the hepatic portal vein. It also travels at a higher velocity. Hepatic artery white blood cells, therefore, are adapted to completely different oxygen levels and blood flow. Whereas hepatic portal vein white blood cells can survive being nearly suffocated from lack of oxygen, and speed doesn't need to be their game. Hepatic artery white blood cells must swim aggressively while worrying less about oxygen. Under a microscope, if these immune cells were on the radar of or of interest to today's medical research and science, these immune cells may look the same. In reality, their subtle differences mean everything. All three of these white blood cell types are incredible swimmers, with a rare ability to go against blood currents in their pursuit of pathogens. Athletes, to the highest degree, they have a special shape that science and research have yet to discover that allows them to hover in an area of rushing blood, much like a grizzly bear wading against dangerous rapids to snatch migrating salmon. Pathogens that escape these secret service agents at the liver's entryways find themselves up against the liver's next defense, lobule white blood cells. These are the personalized guards of those liver lobule elves. They have their own special size and shape, geared toward protecting the lobule's safety. Lobule white blood cells border the capillaries and other blood vessels within the liver, on the lookout for invaders such as the Epstein-Barr virus EBV, which is the unknown creator of hepatitis A, B, C, D, and E, as well as of undiagnosed autoimmune conditions of the liver and a host of chronic illnesses that can result from chronic low-grade viral infections in the liver that go undetected by medical communities. These white blood cells have license to kill, though their job is more difficult than that of the white blood cells guarding the liver's entryways. That's because your liver is your body's filter, so it can be filled with any number of built-up toxins that get in the way of the white blood cells' work. It's much like soldiers on a battleground, unable to see clearly from the smoke of burning buildings. Heavy metal runoff, viral and bacterial waste, old pesticides like DDT and other troublemakers muck up the liver, obscuring the lobule white blood cells' true targets, active pathogens. It's one of the many reasons why keeping your liver clean and healthy is a critical part of protecting yourself from disease. Not just liver disease. All disease. Because bile production is one of the top functions of your liver, there are unknown special bile duct white blood cells assigned to watch over the bile duct system. These cells are the only part of the immune system that can withstand bile's harsh nature. That's made possible by their protective covers, undiscovered by medical science and research, which act as shields, like hazmat suits or firefighters' gear. The bile duct white blood cells look for passers-by in the bile that may cause infection of the liver, gallbladder, duodenum or intestinal tract, or even travel upward and invade the stomach and nab them before they can cause trouble. Occasionally, a pathogen will slip by, at which point a signal will go out and a single bile duct white blood cell will launch a kamikaze attack, following the invader out of the liver and into the gallbladder, duodenum and the rest of the small intestine, a path that will never let it return to the liver. By the end of the journey, this path ultimately destroys and kills the bile duct white blood cell by burning away its protective cover. For a little while, though, the cell's protective cover means it's able to withstand hydrochloric acid from the stomach and toxic substances that someone may ingest as part of food and drink. So as it goes on its suicide mission of pursuing the pathogen, it can stay intact at the outset. Sometimes, if the threat is high, a few bile duct white blood cells will launch out of the liver together. These brave white blood cells know their time will soon end. In order to gain supercell qualities and make their mission worthwhile, they take the same adrenaline that the adrenal glands produce to help digest food. One specific blend out of the undiscovered 56 different blends of adrenaline your adrenal glands produce, and absorb it so they can delay their own death to hunt down the pathogens they're pursuing. If someone has weak adrenals that aren't producing this specific adrenaline blend, the liver will release deposits of the blend that it has stored away in the hopes that the white blood cells will find it and put it to use. A few bile duct white blood cells may not seem like a lot. Keep in mind that there are not many of these blood cells to begin with. The ones that do exist are powerful, and the soul of the liver considers them heroic. Finally, there are liver lymphocytes, which patrol the outer region of the liver. These white blood cells tend to stay on the outside of the liver, from watchtower positions in and around the lymphatic vessels there, though they can enter the liver if it becomes necessary. They too have license to kill, especially when they come upon EBV cells trying to enter the liver
through lymph fluid and establish itself as mononucleosis. Liver lymphocytes are also primed to protect against other herpetic viruses, such as human herpes virus 6, HHV6, HHV7, and the undiscovered HHV10, HHV11, HHV12, HHV13, HHV14, HHV15, and HHV16. The cofactor, Streptococcus, various bacterial and viral mutations, and even dangerous superbugs, such as C. difficile and methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, MRSA. When a liver is too overburdened with toxins, such as from the environment, an already present viral load, or unproductive foods that someone eats regularly, its filtration system gets backed up and these poisons often leach into the lymphatic system. This makes the job of liver lymphocytes much harder. Their watchtowers become saturated with poisons and they're forced to leave. They're also slowed down as they try to join forces with each other and reach pathogens, because the lymph fluid is filled with sludge and debris that make it harder for the liver lymphocytes to swim through. This can become treacherous, because when pathogens such as EBV are in the lymphatic system, they're especially aggressive, in a war stage, trying desperately to take up residency in organs such as the liver. Sometimes, the pathogens gang up on the lone lymphocytes and destroy them, winning the battle, though not the war, if you give your liver and lymphatic system the support they need. The light of knowing. When you were born, your mother's liver sent a message to your own that it could take care of itself. Going back thousands of years in the history of humankind, it has been ingrained in our livers that we don't always offer them a helping hand as we go through life. And so the knowledge is passed along, liver to liver, that it fends for itself. Not that it couldn't use help. It does face limitations over time as it weakens and breaks down from lack of support. When we don't know what the liver is doing for us, it's completely on its own. The liver's immune system doesn't get the outside help it needs and deserves. And so, as the liver loses strength and grows toxic through the years, the liver's immune system becomes a tattered army out in the field and trenches, with holes in its boots and tears in its uniforms. Food and water, in desperate demand, are rationed, and the ammunition supply is down to its barest bones. We can shift this course. We can do something about it. We can heal and avoid disease. We can protect the liver's reserves and its precious immune system. We can change direction from being sick to recovering. We can alter what many believe upon falling ill, that sickness is our destiny. We can use our free will to make choices that were never available before, back when we weren't aware of our liver's grace. Now the choices are there for us to make. We can change our ways without needing to change who we are. We need our livers, and our livers need us. Knowing this is the missing piece of the puzzle. While our livers came into the world with a directive to forge ahead without us if need be, they do call out for love and appreciation. When we simply think about the liver in a caring way, the spirit of the liver's immune system can feel it and even recharge from it. Providing our liver with the next level of assistance takes more than that. When we give our liver nutrients and nourishment like mineral-rich foods,
We provide for the liver's physical needs, and the liver's immune system can strengthen. When we combine both spiritual and physical, our liver's immune system can do the work it's meant to do. Your liver can heal and function the way it's meant to, taking the mystery and misunderstanding of illness and replacing it with knowing, truth, and the answers that your liver's personalized immune system holds. Your liver's white blood cells carry intelligence. Each cell knows what it's up against, which bacterium, virus, or even toxin it's battling. When we treat the liver with intelligence, we assist it with the true miracle of healing. While medical denial can keep us in the dark, we can play it smart by knowing that the liver's immune system is always kept in the light of knowing. Part 2. The Unseen Storm. What's happening inside our livers? Chapter 8. Sluggish Liver. You've just taken a tour of some of the liver's essential functions. If we'd gone into detail on everything your liver does for you, we'd still be here decades from now, cataloguing the multitude of minute tasks your liver performs. What matters is that you connected with some of the primary roles of your liver, roles that are life-changing to discover, because they give you a window into the soul of the liver, which should be just as legendary as witnessing the fin, tail, and eruption of sacred spray from a visiting whale on a trip out to sea. It was enough, I hope, to appreciate that the liver is our constant companion, tirelessly working for us. You also started to get a picture of what the liver's up against. Viruses, bacteria, molds, pathogenic waste, toxic heavy metals, radiation, DDT and other pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, solvents, pollutants, drugs, medications, alcohol, excess adrenaline, high-fat diets, and more take a toll on the liver as it works to protect us on a daily basis. And it's not just what we're exposed to in our lifetime. We can also inherit pathogens and toxins from our parents, who got it from their parents, who got it from theirs, meaning that some of the mercury or DDT or EBV that our livers struggle to contain comes from yesteryear. It's a big job, and the liver does it gloriously. And then, at a certain point, it can become too much. We don't learn how to give our livers a break every once in a while, the way we learn to scrub our dishes and wash our cars, and empty our vacuum cleaner bags and launder our clothes. We don't learn to go easy on our livers in the first place, either. So instead of being able to function freely, the liver gets burdened as everything that we're exposed to builds up and up and up. It all amounts to a condition I call sluggish liver. The Hidden Struggle. In order to truly understand sluggish liver, we need to relate to the organ as if it were a person. Knowing that the liver is living and breathing and highly active, that it engages in over 2,000 responsibilities related to storing, delivering, processing, expelling, cleaning, creating, and manufacturing that we caught a glimpse of in part one, we can get some perspective on what it's like to be the liver. Every day, it's busy working for you, and every night, it's elevating you, selflessly striving to keep you healthy, all for your own benefit and the benefit of the people around you. If you're doing well, the ones closest to you will prosper too. The liver is meant to be your body's peacekeeper. It's meant to be the rock,
the member of the family that makes everything okay, even when that's a challenge. Like the go-to sibling who has the calm, composure, and reason to talk loved ones off the ledge before a situation escalates. It sacrifices itself to protect you from alcohol poisoning, dirty blood, high blood pressure, and much more. In most people, the liver serves this function for decades. Then, like any person, if it's pushed past its limit and taken for granted for too long, it reaches the point where it can no longer keep the peace. It becomes sick, congested, disgruntled, frustrated, and even angry. Pushed over the edge and into battle. The first of those battle modes is sluggish liver. If it's not caught at this stage, bigger and fiercer battles can arise that show themselves as bigger and fiercer symptoms and conditions like the many you'll hear about in the chapters ahead. What are your jobs and responsibilities? What are your chores, your challenges? How do you feel every day as you're trying to win your battles? Are you tired? Do you struggle? Have there been times in your life when a challenge, great or small, wore you out, broke you down or ate you up and spit you out? Have you ever run a race or raced to meet a deadline and then dragged for the next few days? That's how a sluggish liver feels. Sluggish liver is so common that 9 out of 10 people deal with it. In 15 years, it will be 10 out of 10 for anyone who hasn't learned the truth about sluggish liver and how to protect themselves. It's the precursor to practically anything else that goes wrong with the liver. Sluggish liver explains so much of what ails us today, and yet it's not on the radar of medical research and science. Cirrhosis, hepatitis, jaundice, fatty liver, liver cancer. These big-name conditions get all the attention when it comes to this organ. They are, of course, important conditions, and burdensome, sometimes heartbreaking, conditions for those forced to deal with them. And they're ones that we'll uncover in this audiobook. They didn't start out as full-blown problems, though. A person doesn't just wake up one morning with cirrhosis or any of the others. First, sluggish liver develops, slowly, quietly, and over time. If we're not aware it's happening and how to counteract it, the liver gets overloaded. As a result, the liver becomes underactive. It can't protect you as well anymore, and illness is able to take advantage. The symptoms and conditions that result from a compromised liver aren't only the ones you'd expect or the ones medical research and science have documented. Contrary to popular belief, for example, eczema and psoriasis actually arise from a particular type of overloaded liver. Acne, too, a problem we're told is only hormonal or skin-related, is a sign of a liver under a different type of duress. Mystery high blood pressure, mystery heart palpitations, type 2 diabetes, seasonal affective disorder, SAD, dark under-eye circles, chronic dehydration, varicose veins, weight gain, chemical sensitivities, bloating, constipation, it's unknown that these and more originate at the liver. And before any of them bloom into identifiable health issues, they begin as a liver given too much to handle with too little support. They begin as sluggish liver. Which is why it's critical to arm yourself with knowledge about this unknown condition. You can't thrive without knowing how to protect yourself, and you can't protect yourself from what you're never warned exists. A sluggish liver by any other name. Sluggish is just one way to describe the liver when it's in this state of overload, Stagnant is another word that can help us see it for what it is. We learn in school that stagnant water is a breeding ground for pathogens and disease-carrying insects. We know that stagnant water in the Amazon can even harbour brain-eating amoebas. So we take care to keep our yards free of standing water. We know that otherwise mosquitoes will take advantage and multiply. Meanwhile, we don't learn that our livers can stagnate too. And yet now, with this mental image, we can see that the last thing any of us wants is a liver that's grown stagnant with toxins and bugs pooling inside of it, unable to keep up the normal flow that would flush out these unwelcome guests. Alternatively, we can think of a sluggish liver as a misbegotten trash service. Nobody likes to be mistreated, dumped on, forgotten or ignored. Least of all the waste disposal folks who deal with trash day in and day out. Have you ever been taken advantage of? It's one of the worst experiences we can have, both emotionally and physically. If it's happened to you, it was probably disheartening and stressful, and possibly injurious. You've probably taken pains not to do it to someone else. So we're mindful to pay someone to haul our trash away, or we pay our taxes that fund the municipal service, or we haul it ourselves and pay the fee at the transfer station. We bag up our trash properly, get it ready on a regular schedule, and wash out our trash cans when they get grimy. Even before all of that, we recycle and compost as much as we can first, to reduce the waste that anyone needs to process. And yet again, with all that, we forget about the liver, our own internal trash service. Throughout my life, I've known people whose kitchens didn't contain a single crumb and whose carpets didn't hold a speck of dirt, yet their livers were a mess. Breaking a sweat and going to the bathroom aren't all it takes to process out the junk we're exposed to, not in today's world. We don't learn how to support the liver in its self-cleaning, nor do we learn the reduce, reuse, recycle equivalent rules of tempering the liver's load in the first place. The result is that we accidentally take advantage of our livers, assuming everything's going like clockwork, when in reality operations are screeching to a halt. It's like we're sending trash down the chute to a dumpster over and over again, never realizing that the garbage service has gone on strike and for the past several weeks no one's been coming to pick it up. Sluggish liver is the liver's form of going on strike. Knowing as you do now how the liver always has your back, you can know that it's always a reasonable, sensible strike. It points us to a bigger picture, that we need to be just as engaged with our body's elimination processes as we are with taking out the trash. Otherwise,